The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at NewBalance.com. The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features ensure that you can take on any adventure. What kind of features? Well, how about the available H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud? Or the standard third row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together? How about available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone? We're always trying to think about those great spring and summer getaways, but with a car like the Hyundai Santa Fe, anywhere can be your next adventure. To learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe, go to HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for complete details. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson, Tom Fernelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott. It's your call for the best college football coverage, from National Signing Day to the National Championship and everything in between. CBS Sports presents the Cover 3 Podcast.
Hey, y'all, I'm Bud Elliott, and this is my college football summer school series on Cover 3. I bring on the team experts from the 24/7 sports staff and ask them the questions I care about. No fluff. Which players will be toughest to replace? What position groups are sneakily better or worse than I realize? We get you the scoop on each team in 20 minutes or less. Let's go. Hey guys, welcome back in. I'm Bud Elliott, and this is my college football summer school series on the Cover 3 Podcast Network. And today, we're going to talk a little Vanderbilt Commodores, who were a lot more feisty last year than I thought they were going to be. And to do so, we're going to have Robbie Weinstein come on. Vandy 24/7 does a great job. If you want any kind of Vanderbilt news, that's the spot to go to. Robbie, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Bud. And yeah, Vandy was more feisty than I expected last season too. I mean, I thought that they were going to be less just absolutely terrible than they were in Clark Lee's first season, but I did not expect 5 wins.
5-7. And you know, you could quibble like were they a game lucky or not relative to the power ratings, but they were a top 80 power rated team for the first time in 4 or 5 years. So that's a legitimate, pretty solid season for a building Vandy team. I know that's not their ultimate goal. That's not where they want to go, but had to be pretty fun actually covering these guys.
Well, certainly late in the season. I mean, I think early on there was some ugly football in a number of these games. But toward the end, I mean, it sort of came out of nowhere, to be honest with you. They almost beat Mizzou, and kind of the way that that game went down at the end with a questionable call on 4th and 1, on a drive where they could have won the game, it felt like maybe things were going to fall apart for them. And instead they came back and were able to win at Kentucky in sort of a, you know, miraculous fashion. They needed a 4th and 20 to win that one. And then the Florida game really came out of nowhere because they legitimately went and won that one and you know, kind of controlled it from the beginning. The yardage at the end of the game really flattered Florida, but that most of that came after Vandy was up big. So they improved throughout the season. And, honestly, during spring ball, it looked like that, you know, upward trend continued.
Absolutely. So let's start with the offense here. Last year, 56th in the power rating. In a down-to-down basis, there were certainly struggles, and that was early and late. But they did something that I'm not entirely sure is repeatable for any team just relative to what the rest of the offense rated. Man, they hit third and long completions and converted third and longs at a ridiculous rate. And that really helped them to win those 5 ball games. They do lose Mike Wright at quarterback, but A.J. Swan played a lot last year and I think was sort of the dude that they wanted to go with ultimately. And was better in SEC play. I think Wright had some, you know, quite a bit of success against the early season schedule. Where do you see Swan taking a big jump this year if he can?
Yeah, I think, you know, he didn't get, like, toward the end of the season, he was dealing with some injuries. He had at least one concussion. And so I think sort of where you'll see him maybe take a step forward is he had, like, really good chemistry with Will Shepard, but I think sometimes he would lock in a little bit too much on Shepard, and that certainly became apparent in the Missouri game, where which was one of Swan's worst games of the season. I think he'll probably get better at kind of commanding the offense, being a leader, and spreading the ball around a little bit more. I think it's possible that you see him throw a good amount of picks this season. I think he only had two last year, and he is kind of a gunslinger who at times will put the ball at risk and should have had more interceptions than he ended up having last season. But, I mean, you look at the arm talent, like, that's not the type of guy that Vandy has had, certainly in the last 10 years. I think you probably would have to go back to Jay Cutler just in terms of his ability to push the ball down the field. Kyle Shermer was a really good player, but that was more like intelligence rather than true arm talent. So he definitely, I mean, he gives Vanderbilt, like, a downfield passing dimension that it hasn't had in a while. And I mean, maybe it says a little bit more about the SEC overall, the quarterback situation, than about Vanderbilt. But, I mean, there's an outside – like, there's a decent chance that he ends up in the top half of the league's starting quarterbacks this season. That's kind of stunning, you know, considering he's only a true sophomore.
Absolutely. So, at the running back position, they do lose Ray Davis, who I thought was a really good back. Kentucky thought so, too, and he ends up transferring to the Wildcats. But – they've recruited this position fairly well, it looks like. I know you had some guys kind of flash in the spring. Who's the dude, if there is one, who's going to step up and take the lion's share of those carries?
My guess would be Cedric Alexander, who's a true freshman, and they call him Baby Ray. He's got some similarities, very similar build, and I think a similar running style as well. You know, Ray Davis, as you said, very good player. He wasn't a burner, but he I think had good vision. He was a good cutter and, you know, good pass protector. Could also catch the ball out of the backfield really well. And Cedric Alexander brings most of those same traits. He's a three-star true freshman out of Austin, Texas. And, you know, I mean, if you lined him up and had him run the 40, he's not going to blow you away. But Vandy has a zone blocking scheme, and they're not really looking to hit home runs in the run game. They're more looking to keep the defense honest and keep the chains moving. I think he can do that. He really came on strong late in the spring and ended up probably being their best running back by the end there. They've got two more true freshmen coming in Diego Benson and AJ Newberry. It's hard to say exactly what to expect from those guys. So this is going to be probably a by committee approach. I don't think anybody is going to be, you know, getting 20 carries a game like Davis was at times last season. It's definitely the weakest position on the offense for them, probably, I would say. But I also don't know that they need to have star power there, considering they've got a pretty good wide receiver core and it appears a good quarterback, and they've got a lot of starts returning on the offensive line too.
I'm glad you mentioned the receiver position. They return basically everybody who caught a pass. Shepard, McGowan, Skinner are all back. Am I right to assume those guys are your starters, or do you think maybe there's a chance that, like, some young guy steps up and usurps one of them?
I think those are the starters, and they're pretty good starters. Like Quincy Skinner in particular, he looked really good during fall camp last season, and then in the very first game against Hawaii, he tweaked his hamstring pretty badly toward the end of the game and just didn't do anything then for, you know, probably the first half of the season, started doing some stuff late. He had a really good spring. I mean, he and Will Shepard look like SEC wide receivers. They're not going to run a 4.4, certainly, maybe even a 4.5 in the 40, but they're big and physical and athletic. Jaden McGowan runs a 4.35, so he gives them the speed aspect of things. But they do have some depth there, too. Gamarion Carter is a, I think, redshirt sophomore who did some things late last season. He took an 80-yard hitch to the house against Mizzou. And Junior Sherrell is a true freshman coming in who I think is going to play as a backup slot behind McGowan. He played for Lipscomb Academy and was their best player. You know, Trent Dilfer was coaching that team, and that was one of the best high school teams in the country last season. So to be the best player on that team definitely means a lot. I think they've got a very legitimate SEC caliber wide receiver core, honestly. And, you know, we'll see how the pass protection is, but, like, they can hurt you, you know, in that aspect of the game. I don't know how well the run game is going to complement that, But this is looking like a pretty decent group, especially because Shepard, I think, is going to be drafted next season. You know, maybe not even day two, but I mean, I think he could be like a fourth round pick or something.
Absolutely. So you mentioned that pass protection. The offensive line did improve some last year, which was really helpful to the improvement of the offense. And you returned everybody with the exception of the left tackle. I would assume kind of mild to moderate improvement here, or do we think there's room for a big jump?
Yeah, you know, I think so. They've got, it's an interesting group because they've got like over 70 starts returning, but I don't know that the talent level really is that good. I think they got absolutely as much as they could have out of that group last season, and you know, credit them, like coming into the year, I thought that was a huge weakness, and they didn't even end up being the worst offensive line in the SEC. I think that probably would have been Kentucky.
Yeah.
Having said that, you know, have these guys maxed out? A lot of these guys are Derek Mason recruits. They're big, but maybe not the most athletic and not the quickest. It's not really the type of player that Clark Lee's staff has looked to recruit to Vanderbilt. They look for lighter offensive linemen who can move and play in that zone scheme and develop over time as they add weight. So I kind of wonder if maybe they're going to take a slight step back, to be honest. Vandy did a lot of work last season to try to protect that offensive line with, you know, having tight ends blocking and, you know, also running backs helping them out. And, you know, if you take the training wheels off, are they going to be able to protect the passer as well as they did last season? I'm not sure that they can. Like, for instance, Gunnar Hansen, so they've actually lost the right tackle, but Gunnar Hansen is returning at left tackle. I think he could be an NFL player as a guard, but I'm not really sure about, you know, high-level left tackle in the SEC. I think he's serviceable, but I wonder about their ability to really hold up on the edge against really good SEC edge defenders. I think they can be fine in the run game, but I would be a little bit surprised. Like, I think they just kind of are what they are at this point. I would be surprised if they take a significant step forward, you know, when they've already got 70-something starts under their belt. I'm just not sure there's that much for them to improve until they get the younger guys in there.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Sure. I mean, that speaks to the coaching, that they're able to hide them some and maximize the talent. I guess, and it's weird to say this given that it's an SEC schedule, but like Wake Forest, of the teams on the schedule, like Wake Forest lost a lot of pass rush. I think Kentucky still has good. Missouri lost an important pass rusher. You know, Florida's probably better on the interior than they are the edge. Georgia, okay, Georgia's Georgia. Ole Miss, spoiler, when we do their summer school, their edge play is a major concern. You know, Auburn is not great on the edge. South Carolina lost a ton on the edge rush. And Tennessee, like, defensive line was not their school's strength last year. So I guess if there's a saving grace that in playing an SEC schedule, like, I don't see LSU, I don't see A&M, yeah, right? Like, there are some teams that it could be more problematic to play if you have an offensive line that is not a great pass protection thing. So they may be fortunate there.
They had Alabama on the schedule last season, and they had no chance against Will Anderson, but they don't have to play him this season.
Exactly right. So let's talk about the defense here. Little rougher. 94th nationally. Run defense was very competitive, both in conference and out of conference. Pass defense, I mean, thank God for Kansas, right? Otherwise, yeah, it would have been the worst. And well, I guess Colorado is a different level, but that's just that almost doesn't count. They blitzed, unlike Kansas, who was terrible on pass defense too. They blitzed a ton, but they were 128th in pressure rate, despite sending quite a few blitzes, which is probably says something about personnel if you're willing to do it and you still can't get home. Up front, off a run front that was fairly good at stopping the run, they do lose 800 snaps from the defensive, you know, the defensive line. Is that a unit we think can hold serve, or maybe can it step up? Is there any way they would drop off there?
Yeah, so I think it's a lot different from the offensive line in that they are bringing back a decent amount of guys on the D-line, but a lot of them are young and I think have a lot of upside, actually. Okay. And you saw in the spring, defensive line kind of got the better of the O-line in the spring and was very competitive, getting a lot of disruption. Clark Lee said that to him that was the most improved unit, you know, pretty easily on the entire team. And so Darren Agu, for instance, is a rising true sophomore who was kind of like, I think maybe he was a four-star recruit in the composite, but we had him as a three-star. So borderline three-star, four-star guy, 6'6", 250.
We were low on a Barton guy? Oh, man.
Yeah, it is a Barton guy. Yeah,
I mean, where's the love for a Barton guy?
Yeah. So he started to play. Like, he got into games last fall and didn't do anything, but he started to really flash in the spring. And Miles Capers, their best pass rusher by far last fall during fall camp, he went down with a really serious knee injury at the end of fall camp, and so they just didn't have him, and there's no pass rush. So, as you said, that's exactly what it was. They had to bring the inside linebackers and maybe slot corners and such, and they still couldn't get pressure. So that is a recipe for disaster in terms of pass defense. I think they can get – like, I don't think they're going to be a good pass rush by any means this season, but if you go from one of the – like, probably the worst in the Power 5 to just bad – I think that can make a big difference, to be honest with you.
Yes.
Yeah. And so, I mean, the interior defensive line, I think, looks pretty good. They've got some depth. Like, for the first time, you can actually go across the defensive line, and I don't know if there's a star there, but you can say, okay, you got two deep here, two deep here, two deep here, and they can actually rotate some guys in and out and have some success. So, I mean, I think it's baby steps for Vanderbilt at this point, but when you're starting to, you know, finally have some quality depth as, you know, to go along with competent starters, you know, that's when you do start looking at bowl game as a potential.
You know, and James and Clifton are certainly not bad building blocks if you get some of those young guys to you know, kind of glow up, and that's, yeah, that's huge, man. Linebacker looks like it suffered a lot of attrition. It was a decent linebacker unit at times last year. Is there a young guy who's going to step up to kind of, you know, make sure this thing doesn't drop off, or how is the Stanford transfer look, DeCosmo?
Yeah, so that's an interesting one. Aeneas DeCosmo was the only transfer they brought in the winter window, which is kind of crazy, you know, if you compare it to the rest of the SEC. I mean, Vandy just doesn't really want to build through the portal for a number of reasons. And, you know, last season for Stanford, talking to Jackson Moore, who covers Stanford for us, he was saying that DeCosmo did better last year as like a traditional defensive end. But Vandy is going to play him as a stand-up kind of, you know, 3-4 hybrid outside linebacker, defensive end, edge rusher type of guy. And I was a little bit pleasantly surprised in the spring. I thought, you know, like, he's not – I wouldn't say he's like an above-average starter, but I think he's okay. Like, he's passable, and if he plays 35 snaps a game because they can rotate multiple guys into that position – I think he can be very passable, you know, against kind of the mid to lower tier SEC teams, which is who, you know, if you're Vanderbilt, that's who you're trying to beat. You're not trying to, like, you know, you're a long way away from beating Georgia and Tennessee, and you got to focus on beating Kentucky and Mizzou and those types. So he was solid, I thought, in the spring. Losing Anthony Orji at inside linebacker, that's a ton of production out the door. Kane Patterson, the former transfer from Clemson, is going to start, and he was decent last season, I would say. I am expecting them to get Prince Colley from Notre Dame. I have a crystal ball in for him. He's visiting this week as we sit here on May 11th. And I think he's going to end up on the team and probably start and be a nice boost for them. Then Bryce Cowan is a redshirt freshman who is incredibly talented. He's the most talented linebacker that Vanderbilt has had since Zach Cunningham. I don't think he's going to end up being that good, but he was a standout in the spring game, really long 6'4 guy who can run. Needs to keep putting weight on, but he's interesting. And then CJ Taylor is a hybrid outside linebacker safety who PFF really liked. I think they had him second team all SEC, He had a couple of great plays against Mizzou in that game last season. Like, he hurdled a running back to pick up a fumble for a touchdown against Mizzou. So I think, like, now if they get Colley, I think they could be pretty good at linebacker. That was a pretty big question coming into the spring, but that would really go a long way, I think, to shore up their depth there, especially because he's a guy that Clark Lee is very familiar with. You recruited him to Notre Dame, and he fits the system really well.
Is Colley a guy that Clark would have recruited when he was at Notre Dame? I'm trying to think.
That's the connection. They were really tight. I don't know how much they talk at this point, but Lee was his primary recruiter, and if Vandy gets him, that's going to be why.
That's typically what we've seen is, like, if you go get a player off your former roster, he may not end up being a stud, but I feel like the bust rate for those type of players is relatively low because you've coached the guy before. You know he's not a total knucklehead, hopefully, if you're bringing him in a second time, right? And at least you know he can play at that level. Robbie, got to ask you about the secondary here. So they returned three of their top four, at least by snap count. The numbers last year weren't great, but as you noted, like, they blitzed all the time and never got home. So you're asking guys to play a lot of sort of difficult blitz coverage at times. Are we thinking that it's still right, Mahoney and Taylor? Taylor's numbers actually were kind of impressive at times. Are there young guys here that are ready to step up?
Yeah, there better be, or else they're going to be brutal again, I think. So at safety, they've got veteran safeties, Jalen Mahoney and DeRicky Wright. Wright is pretty limited speed-wise for a safety, but he's 6'4", and, you know, is a good tackler. I mean, he had two or three picks last season. Like, he's a pretty solid player.
Is he really 230? Like, he's listed 6'4", 230?
Yeah.
That's crazy for a safety. Wow.
Yeah, he's huge. He's huge. At corner is, like, really the concern. Like, I think they can go too deep at safety and be okay. Corner, they lost by far their top corner, Jadis Richard, to the transfer portal. He ended up transferring to Miami earlier this week. This was a spring loss. And to replace him, they brought in an interesting guy, Nizir Forkurian, who was a Division II All-American at Grand Valley State. So, I mean, you tell me, does that translate? I don't think we know until we see him, you know, play against these guys, these SEC players in practice and on the field. So he could start maybe at boundary corner, at the field spot. They've got a bunch of guys, including redshirt freshman Quantavis Gaskins and Trudell Berry, who was a four-star recruit in the 2022 class. You know, somebody along those lines is going to need to step up because the true freshman didn't really play a lot other than Richard at corner last season. I mean, these are players who are very talented. Whether they're ready yet, I would lean no, but they certainly could surprise me. And at least, if nothing else, I do think they're going to have a lot better support up front in terms of the pass rush, which was, I mean, I think they had like six sacks or something crazy last year. It was really miserable.
Yeah, obviously, Barton, my former podcast co-host. So they were actually almost equally bad at getting pressure and then at converting the pressure they did get into sacks. So if there's any improvement there, the defense will skyrocket from the 90s to, heck, if you get to like the 70s in defense and you stay 50s or maybe high 40s in offense, that's a legitimate team that could compete for a bowl if they're able to do so. A couple more for you. I really appreciate the time talking today. So last year, or 2021, their special teams were horrendous across the board. I mean, their kickoff was garbage. Their punt coverage was terrible. And I think a lot of that was just they didn't have enough competitive depth that was athletic enough to actually cover kicks within the SEC. They fixed a good bit of that last year. Like, they went from bottom 10 in kickoff coverage to bottom 50, which is an improvement. Their punt coverage ended up being really darn good. Their return teams were elite. The field goal kicking was still bad. I mean, bottom 10 in field goal points efficiency. They lose Bolivis, which I use the term lose kind of loosely, but for a team that if they're going to get to a bowl game, they're probably not going to do it in blowout fashion, right? Like, they're going to have to win some close games. They've got to find a way to kick better. Are they going to bring in a kicker, or is the Will Forrest or Ferris kid any better? Or?
Ooh. That's the worst situation of any position group on a team. Will Ferris, you know, has a big leg. He's a preferred walk-on, and you know, like last year during fall camp, he nailed like a 55-yarder in a scrimmage with room to spare. But he is pretty inaccurate, pretty inconsistent. You know, I mean, he's a young player, and he's a preferred walk-on. So they've got Brock Taylor, who is a relatively highly rated true freshman if you look at, like, you know, the specialist rating sites. But he's a true freshman, so who knows? I think they're going to add probably another preferred walk-on, like maybe an Ivy League transfer type of guy. That's usually what they like to do. So it's totally up in there. I mean, I think it's fair to say that kicker is going to be a major weakness for them. At the same time, I do think you could see further improvement in every other area of special teams because, you know, the big difference was just that the way that their current coaching staff recruits, they're trying to bring in athletes. They're trying to bring in guys who are fast and really improve the team speed. And even if those guys aren't ready to play on offense or defense as true freshmen, they can contribute on special teams. And you saw a big difference there. Matt Hayball, the punter, who's formerly transferred from FAU, is also one of the best punters in the country.
He really is. All right, Robbie, I'll get you out of here on this one. Really appreciate the time previewing Vanderbilt. Where is the biggest drop-off, not including quarterback, of course, between the starters and the backups at a position group?
That's an interesting one.
Like, we've all covered a beat where it's like, oh, man, if they lose guys at this position, these backups just really are not ready to play.
I think tight end would be one. They are really thin at tight end. So they had Kamorian Pimpton committed for 6 months or so last cycle. And he started as a three-star recruit, ended up, you know, in the top 100 or so and flipped to LSU last second. And as a result, you know, they're up against the 85. They don't really run guys off. And so they have they're going to have four or five scholarship tight ends for this season. And two of them are going to be true freshmen. So, I think Cole Spence, who's a redshirt freshman for them, has a lot of talent and can do some stuff as a receiver. I don't blocking wise. I think he still has a little bit of ways to go. And then Justin Ball, who might be a starter, he's really, really injury prone. So, I mean, they could lose a couple guys there and just not have any tight ends, which would be an issue because last season they utilized two tight ends a lot on offense. That's what I would point to. You know, one of the reasons why I think Vanderbilt, you know, is a pretty safe bet to be a decent team this season is that they've got really good depth at quarterback. Ken Seals is the backup. Yeah. He was a starter 3 years ago. Like, this is unheard of at Vandy. So, you know, that I think is one of the big keys to their turnaround is that, you know, tight end and maybe corner would be answers to the question you're asking. But outside of those two positions, I think they can lose starters and sort of survive, which is, you know, certainly has never been the case over the last 4 years or so, basically since the last time they went to a bowl game, which was in 2018.
Robbie Weinstein, Vandy 24/7. Really appreciate you joining us here on Summer School.
Yeah, thanks for having me, bud.
Did you know that while over 60% of Americans dream of starting their own business, less than 20% of them take the first step? The reason? Building a business is tough. Taylor Brands is simplifying the business journey. From launching and managing to growing your business, Taylor Brands isn't just another tool. It's your online business partner from launch to success. With Taylor Brands, building your dream business becomes an effortless experience. Their comprehensive platform guides you through every step, ensuring you have everything you need in one place. From LLC formation to bookkeeping, invoicing to acquiring licenses and permits, and even setting up your bank account, Taylor Brands handles it all seamlessly. And our listeners will receive 35% off Taylor Brands LLC formation plans using our link, taylorbrands.com/CBS Sports. That's TAILORBRANDS.com/CBS Sports. So start your business journey today with Taylor Brands.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey guys, welcome back in to Bud Elliott's College Football Summer School. And today we're going to talk a little Utah. And to do that, I'm going to bring on Steve Bartle of Ute Zone. Always enjoy having Steve on Cover 3. Steve, what's going on, man?
What's up, bud? Man, I'm flying high. You know, yesterday tweeted out the Mike Pittman commitment. And what do I see? I get 2/3 of the Cover 3 podcast throwing me a little retweet. That was, man, that made my night.
Look at that, man. So pretty
fun team to cover here with Utah, 10-4, Pac-12 champions again. Power ratings all agreed, legit top 10 team. Played the right quarterback from start to finish this year, which is also an improvement over some previous years. My opening question here, man, can we get this team to start faster? 2018, two multi-touchdown losses to open conference play. Lost to a bad USC team to open 2019. Lost to BYU and San Diego State, right, to open 2021. And then lost to a bad UF team to open 2022. Like, have they talked about this at all, the starting faster thing? Because, like, come October, Utah is pretty much unbeatable.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a topic of conversation. And I think, you know, going back to last year specifically, there was, you know, some things that unfortunately – you know, there were, now looking back at it, some pretty clear flags, red flags. You know, the things weren't going well at that running back room. And when you're talking about a Utah offense, it starts with the run game. And when you don't have your run game, you know, coming into the season in great shape, you don't have, you know, it's not optimal. It's less than optimal. And I think that's going to be the big difference this year compared to last year, as well as, you know, as you mentioned, you know, last year they actually started with the right quarterback and finished with the right quarterback. I think that, you know, with Cam, you know, and I'm sure we'll talk about it and his injury, you know, the expectation is that he'll still be ready to go by Florida, which is pretty quick recovery time considering the injury. But, you know, they know who the guy is. They're preparing, you know, the backup to be ready for opening game. But I think this year, this group, the offense specifically, you know, they feel better about the run game with Jaquinnen Jackson. There's a ton of optimism about him. They feel that they've got a really, really powerful and dynamic run game with guys that multiple guys that they feel would start at, you know, Power Five programs across the country. So, you know, they feel good about the offense and the defense. Defense returns a lot. You know, you lose some key playmakers on that side, but they return the majority of that defense, which ended up first in the Pac-12 again. And so, you know, there's a lot of optimism. I think they should be much better situated to start faster this season.
Absolutely. So I'm glad you brought up Cam Rising, and it was ACL injury in the Rose Bowl, correct? So that's awesome, first of all, that they expect him to be ready for the opener as the Gators come to Salt Lake. If he can't go, what's the level of confidence in the backup?
Yeah, you know, so that was kind of the whole point and goal of spring ball this season, was to prepare the other guys in that quarterback room. You know, there's Bryson Barnes, who's a walk-on, who's come into the program and, you know, he's just put his head down, worked, and has the trust of the coaches. He filled in, you know, at times over the last couple seasons and has done well. They know what they have in him. And so with spring ball, it provided them the opportunity to work on their two freshmen that they brought in last year. Four-star dual threat quarterback type Nate Johnson, dynamic athlete. I think he finished with a personal best of like 10-4 in the 100 meter dash. So really good speed, good athleticism to have at that quarterback position. A little raw as a passer. And then, you know, also Brandon Rose coming out of Murrieta Valley, which has produced, you know, some good quarterbacks. Hank Bachmeier, previously of Boise State. I don't know where he ended up. He transferred. I don't know where, but
I think he's at La Tech now.
Yeah, I think you're right. And so, you know, he comes from a program that's Murrieta Valley. It's a good high school program that has been pretty quarterback friendly with guys coming to the next level. And so Brandon Rose was the guy that sort of emerged from spring ball as the QB2, the guy that has really instilled a lot of confidence, or has really gotten a lot of confidence from the coaching staff, a lot of good optimism about the progress that he made. And, you know, Kyle Whittingham said, basically, if we had to start today, it would be Brandon Rose as the starting quarterback. So, you know, they feel good about that position. Maybe not great, but they feel good, and they expect that there will be more progress to be made as we get into fall camp. And they feel pretty good that if it's one of those three that they, you know, they'll be able to kind of take the reins in that opening game and keep Utah on the tracks.
Awesome. So Dalton Kincaid, first round pick, a really, really fun story. What is the outlook for these Utah pass catchers entering 2023?
You know, man, when you're talking about the Utah offense, it's the run game is strong, but what about the passing game? Like, what are we going to see this year? And I think it'll be interesting. So you've got a new receivers coach, Alvis Whitted, who comes to Utah from Wisconsin. You know, and he's produced some good receivers over his tenure, over his career, between, you know, he's coached some good ones at Wisconsin, but at Colorado State, really, I think is where he's had the most success. Preston Williams, Michael Gallup of the Dallas Cowboys, both guys drafted into the league. And, you know, coming here, he's got some pieces to work with. Devon Vele is a guy that's, you know, he's kind of established himself as the wide receiver one in the group. Really made good strides. I think he ended up just shy of 700 yards, but was number seven in the Pac-12 conference in terms of targets. So got a lot of work, got a lot of attention, and I think there's a lot of optimism about him being that guy for them this year. And then, you know, with Dalton moving on, he was able to kind of pick up a lot of opportunities last year because of the injury of Brian Keithy. With Keithy coming back this year, obviously he'll pick up maybe not where he left off. You know, he was on a pretty good pace to begin the season last year. Started off against Florida with a tremendous game, over 100 yards, continued to play at that and produce at that sort of level over the next few games before his injury. If you can get a player similar to that that can produce as much there, that would be great. And then, you know, with this addition of Micah Pittman, who they just picked up, you know, you're getting a guy, he's probably, I think he is, if you're looking at just the numbers, second most production in the room. And, you know, he's going to fill a role that has, you know, that was missing last year without Britton Covey, who moved on after the 2021 season, you know, a slot type of player that can, you know, he can be dynamic in the screen game. He can be kind of that release valve in the short and intermediate areas of the field. And he's super reliable in terms of his hands, right? 2.8% mm-hmm. drop rate over his four seasons. So really reliable hands. When it's thrown his way, it's either going to be a poor pass or a great play by a cornerback to end up an incompletion. He's very good with his hands. And so that's an element that they wanted to address. And then also, you know, Emory Simmons, the transfer from Indiana, you know, you go over the course of his career, Indiana, North Carolina, kind of two different usages here with Emory Simmons. He was a deep threat at North Carolina, vertical guy, had averages over 20 yards, I think, for a couple seasons. And then in Indiana, turned into more of that short area, intermediate route runner. And so I think you've got a guy in Emory Simmons that he can stretch the field a little bit, maybe not every single play, but you feel good about that dynamic adding to the mix here for Utah. And then two, you know, Utah's, they're pretty hell bent on addressing the wide receiver room in this offseason transfer portal period. And so, like I said, they added Mekhi Pittman. I wouldn't be surprised to see Utah add maybe one or two more receivers in the transfer portal as well.
Wow. Definitely be on the lookout for that. Offensive line wise, Utah State, by my count, really healthy last year and played pretty much the same guys every game, which is awesome. They do lose two dudes, I think one to the draft and one to graduation. Steve, is this a group that's going to take a step back, or how do they feel about the replacements here?
You know, when you lose your starting left tackle, that's always tough to replace, right? Braden Daniels made the move from right guard to right tackle in 2021, made the transition to the left side in 2022. And man, he was good. He provided security for the blind side with Cam, was a good presence, a good physical presence in the run game as well, specifically on down blocks. So that's going to be tough to replace. They also lost their center to transfer. He transferred to BYU. But Jim Harding has done a fantastic job with this group and recruiting guys that really fit the mold and compiling as much good offensive linemen over the last couple of years. So they've got a lot of depth. You know, coming out of spring ball, they felt really good about 10 guys that if, you know, push came to shove, they may just travel all 10 guys on that offensive line because of that sort of depth. They feel really good about the line. And so, you know, look for Falcon Kemetule to be a guy and that's a name, Falcon Kamatule, younger brother of a couple other Kamatules. I think one played at UCF a few years back, another one at Oregon. It may have been the same guy. But Falcon Kamatule at left tackle. And then a name to keep an eye on, true freshman Spencer Fano, was one of the top prospects in this most recent cycle. And, you know, he came into the program early, enrolled early, made a strong impression through spring ball. You know, was a little light, but he's up to 200. I think he told me he was up to 287 pounds. So the goal for him is to hit that 290 threshold and keep pushing beyond that. If he can get to close to 300 pounds, well, there's a lot of optimism that he can be a guy as a true freshman that can come in and potentially earn a starting job on that offensive line. So, you know, and with this group, they return a guy. Keaton Bills was really kind of the unsung hero of the line last year, was great in the championship game. The TV commentators couldn't stop talking about him for a variety of reasons. And so he's really progressed, made good strides last year, and he's going to be counted on to be a leader. He'll play left guard, and, you know, he's going to be counted on to lead that group. So offensive line looks to be one of the top two, three positions on this roster.
All right, so switching over now to the defensive side of the football, Utah had a top 25 defense, still good. Maybe not quite as good as some of the best Utah defenses that we've seen. And I thought, Steve, just to open it up, that the way in which they were not elite was interesting to me. They usually stopped the run extremely well. And last year, they got run on quite a bit, man.
Yeah, no, it was certainly a surprise. And I think, you know, part of that was you bring in a new defensive tackle coach, Luther Ellis, incredible Hall of Fame career. You know, in the NFL, and he came from Idaho, where they played a little bit more of an aggressive and a gap attacking type of defense, and that's not necessarily what Utah's about. They want to control the trenches. They want to get some pushback and control things, and read and react and that sort of thing. And I think it was just a bit of a, you know, mixed signals here in terms of what sure. They were doing up front and, you know, what they and where they found success in years previously. And so about, you know, that Florida game was eye opening to say the least. And obviously with Anthony Richardson, hell of a talent, like sometimes it's not going to stop a dude like that. But a lot of the issue was really at their own fault, you know, their own mistakes cost them. And that continued, you know, throughout the season. UCLA was another game where the run game just kind of, you know, they didn't do well. And so they made progress. They kind of just got back to the basics, got back to the fundamentals, and specifically within their scheme at that defensive tackle position. And guys like Junior Tafuna, Aliki Vamahi, and the third guy, Samote Pepo, really kind of stabilized what they wanted to do on the defensive side of the ball. So once they figured out the right personnel, they rolled with those three primarily. That's when they started to kind of get back, regain form a little bit. And then, you know, other guys, Mahmoud Diabate, took him some time to kind of acclimate and get comfortable with the system. He really hit his stride about halfway through the season. After that bye game is when things really started to click for him. And that final stretch, and obviously level of opponent certainly factors into it. You look at that November schedule, and it was pretty light, you know, Stanford, Arizona, that sort of thing, but it helped. And I think, you know, that final month going into December, the championship game, they played with a lot of confidence, and that's carried into this offseason with the group that returns. And there's a lot that does return on that defensive side of the ball. So there's a lot of confidence, a lot of optimism that they will start much better. And I think part of it in talking with some of the defensive linemen is the fact that Luther Ellis has learned, you know, to coach and use these guys properly in this scheme.
Absolutely. So it just from picking up on some clues here, some cues, it sounds like you think this defense will be better than last year's defense.
I do. I do think it will be better. They know, they have a better grasp of who their guys are. You know, Coach Ellis is in year two, and that was really kind of the core of the issues and the struggles last year was that defensive tackle position. And so, you know, they've got five guys that they feel really good about going into the summer. And that's something that they also didn't necessarily have last year. And they had a couple guys that they felt good about, but some questions. And then, you know, you look at that safety room, you lose a guy like RJ Huber, but you got a guy in Sione Vaki who will fill in nicely, really, really nicely in that secondary with Cole Bishop. Those two will kind of lead things for Utah. Lander Barton, tremendous talent, was a top 50 kid coming out of the class of 2022. He's going to be a guy that they want to use all over the field, right? Linebacker, rush him off the edge, do a lot of different things with him because he's just that talented. And then, you know, the secondary will be really interesting to see how they adjust without Clark Phillips. Clark was great. They've brought in Miles Battle. It's certainly, I think probably, at least in my time covering the team, certainly the longest cornerback room that we've seen. You've got a guy at 6'4", another guy that's 6'2". And those are your most, I'm talking Miles Battle at 6'4", Zamaya Vaughn at 6'2". Those are your two guys that will probably start day one for Utah cornerback. It's a lot of length, and it'll be interesting to see how they adjust. I talked to Coach Sean, asked him specifically, how do you change? Do you have to adjust how you coach these guys when you've got such a difference in size going from 5'9" Clark Phillips to 6'4" Miles Battle? And he said, yeah, you do adjust some things and you kind of can do some different things with these guys. So it'll be interesting, but there's a lot of confidence at every level of this defense. And the defensive end room, you know, I didn't even mention them. You know, a lot of depth there. They feel good about six guys that can get after the quarterback with that group.
Would you go as far as to say, like, this defense is going to be better than the offenses?
Ooh.
Because, like, usually it is. And then, like, yeah, the last couple of years at times, the offense has been better than the defense. So it's kind of curious.
Man, the wild card here is Jaquinin Jackson. You know, I mentioned him earlier, but he's going to be a guy that he's that big play, explosive play element that they've been missing, you know, that they missed last year. Big bruiser, but he has the athleticism. He can really change things. But as of right now, Bud, like, yeah, I would probably give the edge to the defense. I think the defense will be better than the offense, at least, you know, starting out the gate, and then Cam Rising and his return and what that'll look like in that process. You know, we'll see. But yeah, I think this defense is going to be pretty good.
I know some coaches that were pretty excited about the Stanford transfer that Utah landed. Is he expected to play?
Yeah, no, they are through the roof that they were able to add an all-conference guy in Lavani DeMooney. He was a guy that they desperately wanted as a high school recruit, I think, all the way back in 2016. So
yeah, I mean, he's like 23, 24 years old.
Yeah, man, those missions, they really mess with you. So, but yeah, he's a guy, like I said, all-conference linebacker. And when you do that, when you're able to earn that sort of accolade at Stanford, who hasn't been great over the last couple of years, it really says a lot. And so he's a guy that fits really well with what they like to do. Big physical guy that can get downhill and be a presence there, but still mobile enough to be effective in coverage. He's going to be a great complement. That's really kind of they're looking at a three-headed monster with Kareni Reed, Lavani DeMooney, and then Lander Barton at that linebacker position. But yeah, they are through the roof about DeMooney.
It feels like a really, really nice room there. What position would you say is the biggest in terms of the gap between the starters and the backups?
Ooh, wide receiver. Yeah, wide receiver. You know, this was the sort of thing that, you know, Kyle Whittingham, you know, he didn't pull any punches talking about the group in the final week of spring ball. You know, he said, like, the depth at receiver is something that we have to improve. And, you know, they felt good about, you know, two guys, Devon Vele, Money Parks. But even then with Money, you know, there were concerns about, you know, how reliable his hands were, had some issues with drops during spring ball. So, you know, they were, like I said earlier, with the Mekhi Pittman stuff, they're kind of hell-bent on improving that room and adding guys that improve the depth. So, you know, when talking about wide receiver one, Devon Vele, to the rest of that group, you know, there's a big drop-off. And so they wanted to add guys that have experience, that have production to their name. So, yeah, I would say that that's kind of the biggest drop off there.
Awesome. Steve Barton with Ute Zone, giving us all the scoop on Utah. Steve, really appreciate the time.
Bud, appreciate you, man.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.